Hi there and welcome to Everyday Business with me, Aidan Donnelly. I've been analysing and investing in companies for nearly 30 years and I'm fascinated by how the companies operate, the entrepreneurs who start them and the business people and managements that run them. In this podcast, I'll be talking to a whole host of people with different stories, backgrounds and journeys, learning about the businesses and gleaning some insights and lessons from their experience. For those that are listening, don't forget to like, share and subscribe if you enjoy what you hear. So without further ado to today's episode, and man have we delivered. DPD Ireland is one of Ireland's leading parcel delivery and logistics providers, specialising in domestic and international courier services for business and consumers. The company operates as part of Geopost, the parcel and express delivery arm of La Poste, the French National Postal Service. DPD Ireland delivers tens of millions of parcels each year through a franchise-based distribution model supporting over 1,600 delivery professionals and staff. The company is recognised for its focus on innovation and sustainability in logistics. The company recently announced a $5 million investment in their dedicated out-of-home delivery service, Pickup, becoming the first parcel delivery company in Ireland to offer this service. This new service will allow customers to have parcels delivered directly to their dedicated branded lockers across the country, offering customers greater flexibility, privacy, convenience and affordability when receiving their parcels. With me today is Colin Kennedy, a technology and logistics leader with 30 years experience devising strategy and leading transformational change for both the domestic and international B2B and B2C organisations. He has held Managing Director, CIO and Innovation roles in the technology, logistics and medical industry and is currently Managing Director of DPD Pickup and a board member of DPD Ireland. Colin, you are very welcome to the podcast.
Thank you.
Let's start off with, give us a bit more detail on DPD Ireland. I'm sure everybody knows, and I certainly my wife is on first name basis with the DPD driver at this stage. But tell us about DPD and the operations within Ireland.
Okay, so DPD is in Ireland now 40 years this year. Okay, so we're around a long time. We'll be celebrating our 40th anniversary here later on in the summer. It's going to be a nice event for everybody. So this year, just gone by, in 2025, we delivered, as you say, 45 million parcels across the island, okay, which is, it's really been a significant growth path for us in the last couple of years, because particularly since COVID, I guess, right? We're, as you know, for a company that's 40 years old, we're still experiencing really significant growth, you know. And we've probably doubled in size in the last 5 or 6 years, because the whole economy took a bit of a step change in around COVID times. So the business is going great. We're doing really well. Our business unit, uncharacteristically, I suppose, is the island of Ireland. So we cover all 32 counties in our business unit. We have, as you say, around 1,600 people working in the business. Around Christmas time, that goes up over 2,000 people working in the business, because people, as you say, like your wife and my daughter and various other people, and men do have something to do with it as well, you know. We buy a few bits and pieces as well, but that's when the peak happens for us. But the business is going really well. We've got, as you say, we pitch ourselves as the premium carrier in the country. We're probably up there near the most expensive. The reason is people pay for
the quality of service,
you know. And we're doing really, really well. The and you say about your drivers and stuff like that, you know, we've become a kind of a household name now, particularly, again, I keep referring to COVID, because it changed the world for us, right? The everybody knows their DPD driver now by name. And I don't know if that's good or bad sometimes, you know, because they know plenty of things about everybody, you know, and how everybody's lives have changed as well. But it's a really tight relationship we have with consumer now.
A big trust issue too, you know, like that, you know, that, as you say, it is a premium service, but you know that the delivery, if the DPD fella tells you he's going to be there at between 1 and 2, he's going to be there at 1 and 2, and they're going to take care of the parcel, it's going to be put in the safest place if you're not there.
That's it, yeah. It's really important, and that's what our customers are paying for us, because, you know, an awful lot of our customers don't actually see their customers, you know. Online selling is different to, you know, the guy walks in off the street, you can build a rapport with them. In our business, our drivers are the representative of the customer in front of their customer, right? So it's really important that that relationship is strong, because that's actually the connection that the consumer makes with the people that they're buying from, you know? So trust is everything. Quality is everything. Service is everything. You know, we built our business on having what we call a 99% service level, which means you give us your parcel today as a shipper and we're going to deliver it the next working day 99% of the time. And so that's a high bar. It mightn't sound that high to some people, but in comparison to some, you know, to other methods, it's extremely high. You know, and so we guarantee it. So if we don't do that, we'll do other things to make sure we can achieve it for the shipper.
You mentioned an interesting thing, because ultimately, you know, as you say, the customer is not the person who ends up with the parcel. Your customer is the one who has sent the parcel, not the one who's receiving it.
Yeah, well, we see ourselves as having two customers.
Okay.
Right? Obviously, there's the customer who pays the bills, right? They're the people who give us their parcels, give us their shipments. We send them invoices and they pay us, right? But really, all of our interaction is with their customers, right? So the consumer... and this has changed now in the last couple of years. When I started in the business quite a while ago, 90-95% of all of our parcel deliveries went to other businesses. So it was B2B. And in the last number of years, that's turned on its head completely. So today now, we have the percentage is probably 70 to and heading towards 75% are to consumer now. So we recognized that a long time ago, because actually, in if we do a really good job, right? This is pre-COVID again. If we do a really good job, we're almost not visible to people. It's you only become aware of your delivery company when things go wrong. Right? Now in COVID it changed because people were at home and the things, and now you can you actually meet them, and you know, it's a there's a relationship, a really strong relationship there. But so we recognized that a couple of years ago, and we spent an awful lot of time actually interacting and improving the customer experience, the customer being the consumer experience. And that differentiated us. The postman has a similar relationship, to be honest, as well. But we now would say that we have exactly the same sort of relationship as that with the consumer. And that's so important for our for the people who are paying our bills.
Yeah,
because obviously those guys need to know that we're doing a good job, we're representing them well, and at the same time, when they're making their service commitment, you're buying today, you know, we've got some shippers now who, you know, they'll take orders up to 10, 11, 12 o'clock at night, and we'll be delivering those parcels the following morning, anytime after 7:30 a.m. I think that the shortest window we have at the moment is 7 hours between buying online
and delivering,
and the parcel sitting on your floor ready to use. You know, so those types of that type of service is really what our business has been built on, and it's why people pay us what we do. But the interaction with the consumer has become so much more important. So much more important. You mentioned there a few minutes ago about oh well, you'll get a notice to say it's going to be between 1 and 2, right? So we introduced we call that predict. We predict when we're going to actually deliver the parcel. We introduced that 8 or 9 years ago, and again, it was a consumer. It was something for the consumer that they didn't have to wait around, or they knew when the parcel was coming, and we then made a service commitment to say we're going to be there between 1:22 and 2:22. And we measure every single driver, every single parcel, every single day that we achieve that. And again, we're over 98.5% of the time
in that window.
In that window. And that means you've got some certainty as to when we're going to be there. And that's really important to us. And nobody else does that. And it's because of the, it's really a relentless focus on the consumer that's driving that. That wasn't driven by the shippers. It wasn't. It was driven by us trying to make sure that we're going to deliver the most efficient, most consumer friendly service to the consumer.
Right. So you've been appointed now as MD of Pickup, right?
Yeah.
What was the thought process behind that, and why now?
Yeah. It's look, in Ireland. everybody wants their parcel delivered to me at home.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll be frank, we've resisted doing this for quite a long time because this isn't new as a concept. Mm-hmm. We're probably the last coming to the party here in Ireland, okay?
Because it's right across Europe, it's done with huge regularity. You always see the...
It is. So if you were to go... The further east you go in Europe, right, you'll see that this is it's not only the norm, it's the premium offering now. So you can take, for example, across Europe last year, there were 22 billion parcels delivered. Okay, 22 billion, a huge number. Over 8 billion, nearly 9 billion of those were delivered out of home.
Okay.
So there is a massive change. If you go into countries like Poland, for example, 75% of all parcels are now delivered out of home. And in the rest of Europe, the average is probably 40%, 30% only a year ago, really growing at a ferocious rate. So it's been moving across, it's been moving across Europe for the last number of years, probably four or five. And because we already had this 99% delivery rate I was talking about, we didn't see the need for it. But we've seen a change.
Okay.
And the out-of-home has arrived into all the rest of Europe and arrived into the UK really last year. And now that's growing at 150% per annum, the out-of-home business.
Okay.
So we decided... We needed to get ahead of this, okay? And it's been driven as well by, there's been a change in consumer purchasing habits. I spoke when we started off, when I started off in the business, it was 90 plus percent B2B. So the change from B2B to B2C, which has been happening in the last couple of years, was the starting point of that. In the last... year or two or three, there's been a huge change again around consumer convenience. They're really driving this demanding, in fact, higher levels of convenience as to how they get their online purchases. So we've taken all of that into account. We've been watching what's going on, and now is the time. We're really confident, in fact, that, you know, within the next 12 to 18 months, we're going to see a huge swing, a really significant swing towards out of home. And it's going to be driven by the consumer. It's going to be driven by convenience. It's going to be driven by people's needs to be more sustainable.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And it's also driven by re-commerce and returns.
Okay.
Okay. Because at the moment... I'll give you some examples of some of those things. Like if you take people buying online, the general thing is they'll buy 2-3 items and they'll say, I'll try those on, which one fits me, colours, all that kind of stuff. And then they want to try and return them. Returns are really a friction point for
the consumer.
It's a real difficult, it's real difficult. And sometimes it's so difficult, the consumer just gives up and says, well, I'll just keep them with absolutely no need for them probably whatsoever. So out of home is about making that much more convenient. What you have to do in the past was you'd have to go to a place that maybe has limited work opening hours. You might have to drop it off someplace to do that. So returns are all about... having some place that you can go to 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, on your way to or from somewhere else. And you just drop it in and it goes back. It has to be as simple as that. The same thing applies to sustainability. What we're talking about with regard to out of home is it does reduce the amount of miles and kilometres.
Your vans have to travel.
Absolutely. You know, we can go to fewer places to drop off parcels. And, you know, you hear the argument. Some people say, well, does that not mean that the consumer has to drive to that place to get it then? And the answer is no, because, in fact, you know, what you see all across Europe is that people build that into their daily routine. So when they're coming home from work, going to collect the kids from school, dropping down to the shop for milk, these locations are so convenient for them that they just drop in, collect their parcel, So it's
not a dedicated trip for them.
The experience across Europe is it's never a dedicated trip. And in fact, they use some terminology across different parts of Europe called slipper distance. So slipper distance is these locations have to be so convenient to where you live or where you work or where you travel that really, you know, you can go there in your slippers.
Right.
And so the key thing about an out-of-home network is it's got to be everywhere. You know, if it's not everywhere, it doesn't work. So sustainability is really, really big. And you mentioned it in your introduction. Sustainability is really important to us as a business. We spent a lot of time in the last couple of years really investing heavily in sustainability because we know we're part of the problem.
Yeah.
Right. We've got for each one of those 1,600 or 2,000 people we have on the road, they're all driving vehicles, you know, and, you know, they'll be creating emissions. So we're really conscious of our responsibility to rectify that as well and, you know, remediate some of that emissions.
The other thing too, just on the consumer, in terms of changing habits of the consumer, do you think as we go forward, because we're obviously now in a situation where we're seeing more and more people back in the office more days of the week. So while it's great to know that the DPD man or woman is going to arrive between 1:22 and 2:22, it might be no good to me because I can't be in the house on that day because I'm back to work 3 days a week or 4 days a week.
Which is another reason for out of home.
Yeah.
You know, if you have location that's close to where you work, on the way home, in the corner shop or the petrol station or whatever it is that you call to, then it can be dropped off there and you can collect it whenever suits you, right? And you go the step further, as I said, around returns, and then you know when you want to send back that item because it doesn't fit or whatever the reason is, it's the same thing. So convenience is everything. And you're right, people are starting to move back to work. And, you know, the norm since COVID is that parcels are left in safe places now. And that sometimes that suits, sometimes it doesn't suit. You know, the weather has something to do with things, right? we're really conscious about that type of stuff, of course. You know, we always make sure that, you know, we leave parcels in a place where
they're safe and they're dry.
Exactly right, yeah. But still, people sometimes would like to say, well, we prefer to say, I'd like to be able to get that at a different time. Or whatever, you know. So it's really important.
How have none of the other logistics firms in Ireland launched a similar thing at this stage?
In Ireland, no, they haven't. Now, there has been attempts over the years. And in fact, we even had an attempt ourselves maybe 8 or 9 years ago. But a lot of this is to do with timing.
Right.
Okay. If you were to ask anybody today even, would you prefer to get your... In Ireland, if you were to ask them, would you prefer to get your item delivered to your home? Or would you prefer to get it delivered to this out-of-home location? They'll still say the home because it's they haven't got used to it yet. They the concept hasn't been introduced to them. So we all we did it, and some of our competitors did it many years ago. But we were probably ahead of the curve. Yeah. So some of the out-of-home networks that existed opened and closed, several of them, in fact, over the last 8 or 9 years, but that's gone now. You know, as a society, we're ultra confident, in fact, that we'll cross the Rubicon now, and it's been driven by things like, as I said, the re-commerce sites, the circular economy, those types of things. Because you've got consumers now. Consumers are huge shippers, which wasn't always the case. You know, you take the likes of Vinted, for example, right? Vinted is a phenomenon. You know, the numbers of items that are now been sold by my daughter, my sons, to other people in, you know, in Cork, in Dublin, in Paris. You know, it's a staggering number of parcels and of shipments. And so therefore, they need to be able to send those things simply, easily, cheaply, right? And that age group are quite concerned about things like sustainability, because it's their future, you know? But that is also changing. people's
mindsets.
So
in the same way, somebody could sell something on Vinted and they can just drop it to one of these locations and it will be and organised for it to be picked up and it will be picked up.
And dropped to another location, either in Ireland or anywhere.
Okay.
You know, so our group, you mentioned we're part of Geopost. So Geopost have over, alone, have over 150,000 of these locations across Europe already. Okay. So it's not new, you know. In some of the very mature countries like France or Poland, you know, they could have a company like DPD or Geopost could have 20 to 25,000 locations in that country alone. So it's not new. But I can guarantee this time next year or maybe no more than a year and a half, you're going to see a lot more of out-of-home locations popping up across the country.
Okay. And will this... will this new facility be solely for the DPD network packages? So it's there isn't a B2B opportunity for you guys to rent space, if you will, in the location.
So from a locker perspective, we are building what we're calling an agnostic network.
Okay.
Which is quite unusual. We're the first ones in our group to do this. Okay. And so therefore we will be open to other carriers using the locations. And we're also doing the opposite of that. We're using other locations as well.
Okay.
So, for example, in Northern Ireland, we're gonna partner with the post office in Northern Ireland,
okay,
and we're gonna partner with a company called Collect Plus in Northern Ireland for locations.
Okay.
So they'll come onto our network, and they'll use ours as well.
Okay.
So that's important because it's the one of the main economic factors in out of home is volume.
Mm.
It's like a
capacity utilization, if you will.
it's like the aircraft or the airline industry model. You got to fill 85% of your seats before you actually can cover your costs. So for us, having an 85% utilization of the lockers is essential.
Okay.
Right now, as time goes by, we don't have any qualms or any concerns about that, because as I said, you take some of these consumer type platforms like Vinted, the numbers that they're talking about they're just mind blowing. And other companies like you know, all the main marketplaces that you might think about, the TikToks, the Amazons, you know, all those as well. The volume of traffic and parcels and purchases that they're generating, you know, it's really mind-blowing numbers.
And presumably there's a kind of a virtuous circle in that too, in that if you make it easier for people to put stuff online and get it to where it's going, they'll use it more often.
That's absolutely, you know, shown to be true. I use the Vinted example again, a company who's only in business maybe 3, 4, 5 years. And, you know, across Europe now, they'll probably ship 350 or 400 million items this year.
It's incredible.
From zero.
Yeah.
Okay. So these aren't small, entities.
Mm.
These have generated a brand new market that didn't exist 5 years ago.
Yeah.
And there's clearly a demand for it. You know, we all have, our houses are full of stuff, you know, that we should be, you know, putting back into the circular economy. And
that we never returned.
If it's like my house, there's still a few swing tags on stuff there, you know. But that's what should happen. You know, we need to encourage those types of business. But anybody now, anybody can go online and ship anything really simply now. Yeah. And that's the way it should be. Yeah.
What's going to be now the process for deciding locations in terms of standalone or in buildings like shopping centres, things like that? And then coming back to that thing of the network is the most important thing, because you need it to be easy for people and close to people.
Yeah, there's a lot of science in it.
Right, okay.
So as part of our business, we have a company who specialise, because this is such a big deal now, we have a company specialised, so they're based out of Paris, in taking all of the different environmental factors into consideration to decide exactly where each of those locations should be put. So it takes into account things like obviously population. It takes into account age profile. It takes into account purchasing age profile, deliveries that we've already done historically. What's the growth? What's the growth plans for areas, particularly around planning and things like that? What's the infrastructure? Okay, and what other things are available in the locality? So you're talking about putting locations where people are.
Yeah.
Okay. I was at a meeting there last week, and a guy was talking about, you know, he was arguing that really we shouldn't be going everywhere. Like nobody wants a locker at the back, at the bottom end of Sheep's Head, for example. Yeah. I says, you're going to put lockers wherever people are.
Right. Yeah.
Wherever people are, that's where you're going to put them. And, you know, you might put one down in Chief's Head or one of the villages up close for it anyhow, you know. But it's all about being where people are, and that's the bottom line. So
and to a large extent, though, you have a huge amount of data because you've been delivering the packages for the last 40 years.
Correct. Yeah, we do have a lot of information around where we go to. So that's useful information. But there's a lot of other information that's blended with to really understand where people want their parcels delivered, including, you know, populations, including planning opportunities in the area, growth, all that type of thing is brought into, and age profiling as well. But so that then decides where we're going to go. It's quite scientific, but in the end, when you see it on a map, you say, you know, absolutely, that makes sense. You know, that's exactly where we should be.
And how many locations have you planned for the next 12, 18 months?
Okay, so by the end of 2026, we'll have 1,000 locations on the ground. So we're going from zero to 1,000 fairly quickly. A big investment for us from a capital perspective. That'll be a mixture of both lockers and shops. Okay. So sometimes we'll be inside the shop and sometimes we'll be outside the shop. Our preference and our growth pattern is going to be around outside because that offers the maximum availability.
Flexibility for people.
Yeah. And the shops that we will be in, they'll all be, as a rule, they're 7 day a week shops. They're early to late type locations, you know. So we'll have 1,000 of those on the ground this year. By the end of the summer, in fact, we'll have well over 800 of those on the ground by the end of the summer. And next year, then we tend to grow that up to 1,500. So there is a point at which there's saturation, I guess, right? But we don't. What we're seeing elsewhere across Europe, right, is, you know, we've a long way to go to get there yet.
Okay.
So we'll and it'll be demand driven, you know, as the volumes increase, you know, as the next company, the next platform comes along and generates even more parcels. Then more deliveries. Then we'll be adjusting our plans to suit that.
Yeah. And then, you know, from an operational perspective, what do you think are going to be the big headaches for you with it?
So, there's a few. You know, where the first thing for us is we have at the center of our operations DPD, we have a hugely automated sortation system. So in Athlone, our head office in Athlone, we have we have an automated sorter that sorts 23,000 parcels an hour, every hour. So and that sorts parcels to each one of the 37 or so locations we have across the country. This is going to be a different magnitude. So this year we're going to have to change all the automation so that we're not sorting to 37 locations anymore. We're sorting to 1,000 different individual locations.
Okay.
So in the back end, that technology and that operational demands, that's quite a significant step. Now we have built ourselves into an operation that will support that and growth, but we're also looking at further types of automation with robots, which allows us to go to that level of granularity. For the consumer, the technology there is really important, because as important and as much of a focus that we put on the consumer in the normal daily parcel business, the vans that you're seeing around the road, in this business, in DP Pickup, it's 100% focused on the consumer. 100% focused on the consumer. So we're building a new app technology. Everything will be done through your app. So there's some challenges around that. We're building it so that it's labelless, which is a really interesting. It will be the first ones really to go into mass labelless in Ireland, which means if you want to send a parcel from A to B, you don't have to have a printer to go and print out a barcoded label or anything like that. You write the name on it
and the address, and that's it.
Bring it to the locker or the shop. You'll have a QR code on your app, and then you just show that and off it'll go and it'll find its way. So labelless is a huge thing. 100% of everything that goes through this business will be labelless. And then the other thing is it's going to be touchless. So touchless, what that means is you as a consumer, if you go up to the lockers and you want to put in a parcel or take out a parcel, you don't actually have to touch the screen. You don't have to go through any process on the screen. The app will actually do all
that. Like the go cars or things like that.
Yeah, well, it'll know that you're at the locker.
Okay.
And a door will open for you.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. Your door. So if you're collecting something, you come up, you open your app, I'm here, the door will open with your parcel.
Okay.
So really simple stuff. Yeah. Same thing for dropping off. You've already created things. You've already created a shipment on your app to say I want to send it, you know, to my grandmother in Sligo, and since you're there, you say I'm here now. Open the door, close the door, and that's it done. So, you know, a lot of technology there that didn't exist in Ireland before. And actually, some of that stuff doesn't exist in a lot of other countries. It's one of the benefits we have of being coming late to the party. Yeah. You know,
everybody else has had the teething problems.
Well, they've all had their problems. We can see, and we've spent a lot of time looking at what's worked in other jurisdictions and in other countries. And we're picking the best of everything. And focusing everything that we're doing on giving the consumer the best experience, you know, and it's the advantage of being last to the party.
But that's fascinating, though. Like if you have a labelless thing, like you know, we all see about automation in the logistics industry, and it's all based off barcodes and things like that. But there's not going to be a barcode on this. So are the robots going to know where it's to go to?
The consumer isn't going to have to use a barcode, but we're going to do some other things internally in our system. But what we're doing is, again, coming back to our focus on the consumer doesn't need to worry about that, you know, because, again, it's a way the world has changed. Fewer and fewer people are printers anymore. Mm. Right. And when you do, it's been so long since you use it. The ink ran out 3 months
or
gone.
Yeah.
So it's now another friction, you know. So the consumer doesn't need to go and print anything out other than write there where they want to go onto the parcel. And off it goes from there. Within our system, we'll do things with barcodes.
Okay.
Specifically for automation. To make sure that travels, and we'll get that 100% accuracy on where your parcel is going and that it gets to the right place when we say it's going to go there. So lots of stuff going on there in the background to make sure all of that works. So the technology is really, like it is in our main business, you know, you look at our main business and DPD, you say, you know, you're moving a parcel from A to B. There's an awful lot of stuff
that happens between A and B.
Yeah, to make sure that it gets there, you know, and it happens tonight. You'll have it tomorrow. And, you know, we sort, as I said, 23,000 parcel items an hour.
Mm.
So therefore, there's a huge amount of tech is in there to make sure that everything goes to where it's supposed to go.
And then does that mean you also have to work with your customers, the businesses, because they'll have to have a drop-down menu now that decides that I want it to go to the pickup point at wherever, Tesco Clare Hall or somewhere like that, you know?
Yeah. So a lot of the online marketplaces, online shops, they already have the ability to, at the checkout, select where you want something to go to.
Okay.
So if we're at one of their carriers, then all of our locations will be...
Okay.
So you'll say, I want it... you can type in your air code or your location. It'll say, here's the six...
places that you're hacking.
You can get it delivered to you locally. Or you can say, actually, no, can I get it delivered closer to where I work, for example? And it'll bring up that list for you. So okay. Show you where it's closest there. Or anywhere you decide you want to yourself. But the checkout... that's already happened.
Okay.
Everywhere else in Europe, that's already happened. Yeah, and that's old hat now.
What's the culture in DPD?
So we've a few things that are really important to us. Number one, okay, we're very people-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody might say that, right? But it's really important to us, specifically for the reason I said to you earlier on. Our people... are the representatives of our customers with their customers.
Mm-hmm.
And our success is absolutely grounded on the fact that relationship and our people do such a good job. So, you know, and that's been, and we spend a lot of time making sure that that's the case. So the culture around how we look after our people, how we those people work for our customers is really, really important. That drops down into service then.
Mm.
So that's what delivers the service for us. Because our we have a fanatical, I guess is the word you'd use, drive towards delivering that 99% service. It is what differentiates us as a business. And therefore, if we don't do that, okay, then you end up, you know, dropping down the tree, I guess, with regard to what differentiates you. And, you know, eventually you have to get down to price then is all that's left.
Yeah.
So we are absolutely focused on making sure that we maintain that service level for our customers. So the people are up there at the top, and they're then who delivers for us the service that our customers want. So they're two of the main, really most important things for us. The systems that we have below that, and the culture around innovation is really important. You know, one of the things I really enjoy about DPD, it's one of those organizations whereby failure is okay.
Mm.
Okay. And that is a really key component to ensuring that you innovate.
Yeah.
If people feel that they can't stick their head above the parapet because...
it'll get shot off.
Yeah, then they don't take the chances that are... or they don't take the risks that are required to drive the business forward. We don't have that in our organisation.
Yeah.
Innovation and risk-taking is absolutely a requirement. And because of that, the culture... the company is in... constant flux and change, right? So change management is difficult everywhere as an organization, but in our business it's an everyday occurrence.
Yeah.
And it gets easier then when you're doing it all the time.
Yeah,
you know, it means that
the
muscle memory is there and you're always moving. So trying to move people from a standing start isn't a problem because people are always moving.
Yeah.
You know, so they would be three of the main the really most important elements of our culture: the people, the service delivered by the innovation and the tech, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Really, really important in our business.
And is it more difficult for you because, as you said, particularly on the service side of it, you have a lot of, it's a franchise model to a certain extent. So they're not your employees per se,
yeah,
but they carry your logo.
Yeah. So the 37 locations we have are not our employees per se. They are franchises, you say. But we operate a very strong franchise model.
Okay.
So each of those 37 locations are, you know, they operate to a very strict model.
Mm-hmm.
We control all of the systems, we control all of the branding, we control all of the processes. So if you were to ask any of our 1,600 drivers or people who work in any of those 37 franchises who they work for, it's absolutely transparent to them that they work for DPD.
Okay.
Okay. So it's and it's really important that that's the case. So all of the things I'm talking about around how we look after our people, how we look after our customers and the service that we deliver and the innovation that supports all of that, that comes all the way through the organization, including through the franchises, because they have to deliver all this. They, in the end, they're the people who
deliver
deliver the service. So we spend a lot of time engaging with the franchises, engaging with our customers to make sure that everybody is aligned with where we want to go. And, you know, if you were to ask any of the people who worked in the franchises in the depots, you know, what's important, I'd be really surprised if the first thing they didn't say was service.
Okay.
You know, we must deliver
on the promise of 99%.
Because that's the differentiator. Yeah. Yeah. Everybody is aligned, 100% aligned. On that is what differentiates us as a carrier versus against our competition.
You mentioned innovation. This is I talk a lot in with people on this, but there is a balance between the need to innovate, but not get distracted by going down cul-de-sacs, right? So how do you, and you know, and like you can take it across the industries that you've worked, you know, when you look at it, how do people balance that need to be innovative, but not end up going down places that really just, you know, it might work, but it just might not be successful in terms of commercially successful.
Yeah. And look, there's been a number of different things over the years that we would have done, innovative things that you might argue weren't a commercial success. Mm-hmm. We'd argue, on the other hand, okay, that they delivered value to the business.
Okay.
Okay. So there's a difference perhaps there. Mm-hmm. Okay. An example would be what we're doing around what we did a couple of years ago. We launched a product called Parcel Wizard. Okay, Parcel Wizard was innovative at the time. Didn't deliver any new customers, but what it did do is it's the program that we launched to focus entirely on the consumer.
Okay.
Okay. Consumer didn't pay any of our bills. We didn't bill a single consumer for anything that we did. But all of our innovation for quite a number of years was about dealing and looking after the consumer, like I've spoken about here all morning. So so is that a commercial success? Didn't deliver any revenue to us or any money to us. But what it did do to us is it drove up our service. The consumers were driving a momentum back to the shipper saying, actually, I want you to use
DPD.
DPD.
Yeah.
Now, so... that's the truth about around, you know, how do you make the choices? Sometimes you make the choices based on what you believe your strategy is, and we're still firmly convinced that our strategy is around delivering a fantastic service by fantastic people and using new and easier ways in which to help the consumer. With regard then to how do you make those choices, there's some simple things you can always do, right? Number one, look for the pain points, right? Always try and resolve a problem in somebody's life, okay? So a lot of the things that we do are resolving either a problem for the consumer or they're resolving a problem for the shipper.
Right.
Okay? Or of lately, also resolving a problem for the environment.
Okay.
Okay? So if you can focus... right, on resolving pain points for people. Like I said about returns. And like out of home now, right, is we're addressing a really strong consumer demand that we can see happening elsewhere. Okay, is there a commercial argument for it at the moment? Today, no, because we're doing such a good job on what we're doing. Why would we do it? Because we can see there's a pain, there's pain points across Europe that have been resolved by doing something differently. So we're making this choice now to make a change in our model. We're doing it slightly differently to other companies within our group. We've broken this business out into another separate business outside of DPD. And because of things like culture and stuff like that are slightly different. But it's all about addressing consumer, customer or environmental pain points. If you stick to those, you can't go too far wrong. It doesn't mean that you won't still, you know, go up blind alleys. We've had many an innovation that we launched and it didn't really take off the way we wanted. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Right? Because we learn from every one of those. And, you know, if you go and do something, it didn't quite hit the mark, well, then you evolve it and you go and do it again.
Yeah.
And there's a culture within the organization that encourages that, which means it's okay to not quite make it this time around. Let's go again. And it has to be relentless.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's also, it's not necessarily doing it for the sake of doing it. In terms of it being futile, it's actually doing it to refine it, as opposed to, it's evolutionary rather than revolutionary.
Yeah, it is. And you should never really take on, in my opinion, you should never take on innovation for the sake of doing it, right? You know, there's lots of new hot things going on all the time around, you know, AI, like, you know, various other things like that. Everybody wants to get into AI. Really, you got to get into AI in areas in which it delivers
a tangible
outcome. You know, I always say to people, reach for the stars, but make sure you got one foot on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, you got to make sure that you're going somewhere with this. You got some sort of a train of thought, and I always, what is it delivering? Which pain point? Where? What is it resolving for people, or for your customers, or for the environment?
Yeah. The other thing you just mentioned there briefly with the new pickup service going to be a separate entity, right?
Yeah.
How will the culture be different between them?
So DPD is a next day delivery business.
Right.
We don't know anything else. You as a shipper, you give us a parcel, we're delivering it tomorrow.
Yeah.
Okay. And that suits all of the customers that we deal with as a business. That's what they want. Out of home is slightly different in that it's what we call a deferred service. And deferred means it's not necessarily delivered tomorrow. It's delivered when we say we've told you that it's going to be delivered.
Okay.
So some of the re-commerce sites and some of the other out of home customers, speed isn't the most important thing to them. Okay, it's making sure that it gets there when they say it's going to be delivered, and it's about reducing costs.
Yeah.
Okay, so in pickup, we'll be delivering in 2 days or 3 days or 5 days. We'll agree with that with the shipper up front, and then we'll deliver on those dates 99% of the time.
Okay,
so that's a difficult thing. Culturally, for people within a business that knows nothing other than always finding ways to make sure that we get it there tomorrow, to say, no, actually, not tomorrow, the day after, or the day after that. And why you have to break it out culturally is because getting it there tomorrow is much more expensive than getting it there in 2 days or 3 days. So we have a relentless focus on making sure that we deliver when we say we're going to deliver, but the cost has to be right as well.
Right. Okay.
Really, so really.
Almost got two balances now as opposed to one focal point in the past.
Correct.
Yeah.
So it's a difficult thing. You know, I speak all the time to people within DPD's main business, and they're always... as is our way, right? We're always trying to find, they're always trying to find better ways. If we did this and we could do that, I know it'll cost us 20 cents more, but it'll improve the service.
Yeah.
And in our main business, we'll always do that. We'll always take the option to improve the service. In pickup, it's about getting the balance, as you say, and making sure that we need to deliver exactly when we say we're going to do it. But the shipper is really, really focused on the cost as well. So you've got to take that balance.
Yeah. The other thing too, in terms of the service level, right, it is... Because obviously we've got things like Amazon giving you 1 hour delivery, all of this type of stuff, right?
Yeah.
But as a customer, and you think about it, you go, I don't necessarily need it in an hour. I need to know that if I'm told it's tomorrow, within the next 24 hours, and I'm told that it's between 1:22 and 2:20, I'm happy with that, right? I've often wondered about this. Is there really a desire to have everything, you know, an hour delivery or things like that? Are we fooling ourselves that actually we need it for the immediacy, or actually your service point is it's delivered when it comes when they say it's going to come?
And that's across all of the different spectrums, that is the most important thing.
Yeah.
You make a commitment to the consumer when you're going to get it. And you've got to hit that commitment. Mm. No matter what else happens, you've got to hit the commitment. There are a few companies, like you mentioned, Amazon, who, you know, their terminology is order velocity, right? So they are always, always, always looking for ways in which to improve order velocity. And this is where looking east versus west is slightly different. If you go to America, right, the US, getting things delivered in 1 hour is the norm now. And people there believe that that's the most important thing, that, you know, they want to order now and I want it to be here in less than an hour. And in Amazon, if you're telling them, they'll say now that they're striving for 30 minutes.
Mm.
Okay. Now, do they really need that in 30 minutes? Is it just now that people have gotten used to that as being available to them and now they just don't, you know, they just don't have things available or have things in their house until they need them?
Yeah.
Maybe. We're not seeing it in Ireland at all. In the UK and across into Europe, same day or, you know, 1, 2, 3 hour deliveries, very, very, very small.
Mm.
Completely different type of culture, as it is anyhow across different countries. You know, the cultures are always really different across. You know, I often had conversations with my colleagues in France, for example, and you know, they're always amazed at our delivery rates of 99%. And I was saying, well, the culture in Ireland is different to even France. You know, our next nearest neighbour, bar one, right? And they, you know, in Ireland, or in France, should I say, your neighbour would never take your parcel for you. They just wouldn't. It's just not the accepted thing. In Ireland, it's absolutely no problem because they want to see what you're buying, maybe. Yeah. You know? But it's absolutely no problem, you know. Yeah. And that is, there's huge cultural differences. In different countries. In the US, they have this cultural thing about 1 hour.
Immediacy.
It must be now, you know.
Yeah.
And there's a cost to that, and I mean, obviously there's a cost for getting the item delivered and all that, but there's a cost from a perspective of, you know, the environment and all the other things as well. So look, it's
a balance there.
It's a balance, yeah. And it is a cultural thing.
Yeah. Do you obsess about the small things?
I'm a details person, yeah.
Yeah.
I am, yeah. I'm a planner. My family all give out to me because I'm the typical airport dad. You know the airport dad, the guy who I travel through the airport all the time, and it's like military maneuvers. But then when I go on holiday with the family, right, it just drives them all crazy because I've everything planned out. We're going through here, we're doing that, we're going this other, and they're all going, oh, gee.
And you're trying to care to stray cats.
Yeah, it's a bit like that. No, I'm a details person. Yeah, I do. And that comes from, I suppose, I grew up, my growing up here was I'm an IT person originally. So I started off as a coder many, many moons ago, you know. But planning is my thing, you know.
And then, so is it fast or slow decision making?
Fast usually.
Yeah,
fast usually. I wouldn't be prone, I don't think, unless somebody wants to contradict me. I wouldn't be prone to sort of analysis by paralysis or paralysis by analysis, for sure. I like to make decisions fairly quickly.
And then are they data-based or gut feel?
I probably use a mixture of both, but in the end, the gut is really drives a lot of things. And with fast decision-making, it generally, gut is a big part of it. I like to be sure that... I like to have some backup for that at some point, but the gut, I start off with my gut until something proves me wrong.
Until somebody gets the data to prove you're wrong.
Yeah, that's okay, you know.
Yeah. Customers are great at telling you what's wrong with a product or service, but not necessarily telling you how to improve it. So, you know, and you're a completely customer-facing entity. So how do you manage that, and is it tied into the innovation and back to the pain points? And if the customer, you know, identifies the pain points, you can then try to sort the pain point.
Yeah, and that's absolutely it. Yeah. Customers, I don't find them bad now telling you where you're not going right, and that's good.
Yeah.
I love being, and I do visit a lot of customers. I love being in front of a customer who tells you, and this is a typical sort of conversation. I love what you do, but this thing here, you know,
annoys me.
It drives us mad.
Yeah.
Or, you know, we get loads of calls about this thing, you know, or it mightn't even be to do with you. It might say, well, we're going to launch this new product and we don't know how we're going to get that. And when you get into it, it's great to be able to understand the problem and deliver some sort of a solution for it. So that's where a lot of the innovation comes from, is from talking to customers, consumers, getting the problems, getting the pain points, as I said, where's the friction, and coming up for a solution. Yeah.
And do you think it's a, and I think it probably is, because from something you said earlier on, it's an industry where there's this constant cycle of innovation or even just tweaking everything all the time, because, you know, you start off with the very big pain points, but then when you get them done, there's a whole list of smaller pain points and then smaller pain points and smaller pain points, and then yeah
there is there's an evolution for sure, as you said there. And you know, what you're saying is true, except for because we're constantly moving forward, there's always plenty of larger pain points because we're always doing new things. A year doesn't go by that we haven't launched two or three new things, right? Some of them aren't groundbreaking. Some are as you say, evolutionary steps as opposed to revolutionary steps. But so they all are generating a momentum within the business. The outside world from where we're sitting is changing dramatically all the time. You know, the business world, the economic world, they're all finding new ways to do business all the time. You know, and that's driving us as well. We're having to, you know, take cognizance of what we're seeing going on in the environment. Constantly, we have to bring together new solutions to solve different types of problems all the time. You know, 20 years ago, we never had to worry about people rescheduling their parcels, or I'm not going to be at home, or there's not going to be somebody at home, or, you know, or that type of thing, or even the environment. The environment, you know, it wasn't in everybody's mind 20 years ago. So the world and the environment is changing all of the time. And the profile of the customers and the profile of the issues that we're seeing and they're encountering changes all the time. So that's what's driving our business as well.
Yeah. Do you hate losing or love winning?
Yeah, I love winning.
Yeah.
Probably hate losing more, maybe.
You see, that's such a great question.
Yeah.
It's kind of, everybody says, oh, hey, Lillian, but I love winning more. You said earlier on, you're about to celebrate the 40 years here. You know, when you look at it as a management team, how do you feel about what you've already done over the 40 years?
Yeah, I'm super proud of the way the business has evolved and responded. A lot of businesses don't stay around for 40 years. You know, it's a long time. When I started off in this business, I'm in it now, I think it's 22 or 23 years or thereabouts. We were probably looking, processing around 10, 11, 12,000 parcels a night. Mm. And and now we're processing twice that per hour, you know. So our business has evolved really significantly. So I'm really proud of the way that the business has evolved to respond to that. And we've continued to stay at the top of our game, making money, delivering the best service, right? We've built super teams of people. We've got some of the best people who are delivering really fantastic things for the business. So really super proud. It's been, for me, as I said, one of the biggest joys for me is that we've got that culture that allows us all to express ourselves and to move forward and to do new things all of the time. No, there's never a question within our business of saying, oh no, you just stay in your lane. Right, like that. Yeah. You're always encouraged to get out of your lane and do more things. And, you know, so, It's a real joy, I would say, if there's such a thing in working every day of the week. But there is a real joy in the accomplishments that you make and you achieve.
And do you celebrate your wins?
Yeah, really important. Really important. In fact, we've a group of people just came back last weekend, or was it the weekend before, they're in Marrakesh for a week to celebrate what they had achieved within the business. We like to take a number of people out of the business who've really done well. Mm-hmm. So we did that a couple of weeks ago. All the time we're celebrating people's achievements within the business. We do a lot of things with our people, as I said. So things around, we've really super things like apprenticeship programs, right? Mm-hmm. Really great. And you're usually, I was going to say young people, but there's a mix there who are just changing their life, changing their careers. And we love to see and celebrate how those people are moving on throughout the business. So yeah, we do. We like to celebrate. As Irish people, we're not always great at it. We've got better at it in the last couple of years, right? We're usually self-deprecating as a nation, aren't we? But we've got a little bit better in the last couple of years. And it's great because, you know, it's brilliant to recognise when people do great things.
And then from a staffing point of view, are you a hire from without or develop from within?
Yeah, I like to hire, develop from within, to be honest with you. There's real joy in bringing, like, I've got some people who work for me now. I've got one guy who started with me about 15 years ago, I'd say, and he started as a guy on the floor picking parcels, moving them around, you know, and we moved him into a kind of an admin role. Then we moved him into another type of admin role. Then we gave him we put him in charge of some people, and now he's moved along, and now he's heading up one of our technical areas. And it really is fantastic to see people progress within the organization. And the good thing about that is, all of those people who move along within the business, they're really invested in everything that we're doing. You know, they've made their home in Athlone, for example. They've really understood what it is that we're doing, where we're going, why we're doing what we're doing. They've came on the journey with us, because they have to invest in themselves to do that. But I could give you 20 examples of that. I gave an award to a gentleman a couple of months ago, and So he arrived in Ireland 20 years ago, a Polish guy. And he told me his story. He arrived and he goes, sat on the hedge or the ditch on the other side of the road across from our old location 20 years ago. Arrived over, didn't know anybody in Ireland, couldn't really speak much English. Came in, started working on the floor, doing stuff. And today now, he's moved all the way through the organisation. Today now, he's in charge of our automation hub. So he's got 350 people working for him. That's not unique.
Yeah.
But people like him are really, they're symptomatic of what it is that we're about. Mm. So, of course, you should balance it. Mm. There's always we don't not bring in people from outside, but developing people internally is just so rewarding.
Rewarding, yeah,
it really is, and you get so much more.
The return on invested capital, if you will, is much higher.
Absolutely, yeah. And these people are really invested in your business.
Mm. Right, final question.
Okay,
open up the book and see what we've got.
Okay.
Oh, it's straightforward. Best advice you were ever given and why?
Okay, that's straightforward. There's the my current CEO, you know, he's a Scottish guy, and he's a kind of a shoot from the hip sort of an individual, you know, and he often says to me, he says, "Do you know the mistake you're making now at the moment?" And I goes, "What's that?" He says, "You're trying to apply logic there to a human situation," he said, right? He says, "You need to forget that and just go with your gut," you know? So I think that's often, not always, but yeah, often very good advice for people, you know?
Yeah. Certainly is. And it goes back to that gut feel, our database decision-making.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for this episode of Everyday Business with Aidan Donnelly. I'd just like to thank my guest, Colin Kennedy. Don't forget to like, share, subscribe, or comment if you enjoyed what you heard. Many thanks, and we will see you next time.
The participants in this podcast have done so for the purpose of sharing their own individual business experiences. Some are clients of Davy, and some are not. They have not received a gratuity or other payment for their time in making the podcast. The views expressed throughout are their own. Warning: the information in this podcast is not a recommendation or investment research. It does not purport to be financial advice. You should speak to your advisor in the context of your own personal circumstances prior to making any financial or investment decision. In the Republic of Ireland, J&E Davy Unlimited Company, trading as Davy and Davy Private Clients, is regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland. Davy is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group. In the United Kingdom, Davy Private Clients UK, Davy UK and Davy Capital Markets UK are the trading names of J&E Davy UK Limited. J&E Davy UK Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. J&E Davy UK Limited is a Davy Group company and also a member of the Bank of Ireland Group.